Vectis Radio.
Welcome to Maggie Talks To, a series of in-depth conversations with people who live and work here on the Isle of Wight. So I'm here with Michelle Newton, who is a mine of useful information on all sorts of things like Rotary, nutrition, Samaritans, and she runs her own business as well. I was going to ask Michelle, after I said hello.
Hello, Maggie.
Welcome to you for doing this interview. Thank you so much. What I'd like to ask is, were you born here on the island? I know it's a stupid question, but were you born here on the island?
No, I wasn't. I was born in a little town called Gwelo in Rhodesia, which is now Zimbabwe.
Mm-hmm. Were you brought up there?
I was. We left rather hurriedly when I was 23.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
So did you go to school there?
I did, yeah.
Were there similar schools to, like we have, an infant school and then a senior school? Or?
Yes, it was. Very similar. Infants, we started a little later. You had to be in your sixth year.
Mm-hmm.
So we started at that age. And then at 12, 13, we went on to secondary school.
Right.
Yeah, very similar.
Did you like school?
I loved it, yeah.
Did you have any idea at that time what you were going to do when you left school?
I didn't. I absolutely didn't, Maggie. And even now, you know, approaching the ripe old age of 70, I still think you, at the time you're at school and you have to make the biggest decision, it just doesn't seem right, does it? Because we change as we get older, you know, things evolve and we're not the people. I'm certainly not the person I was when I was a teenager.
This is true, but there are some people who know they want to be in the Air Force or they want to do whatever, and they know precisely what they want to do at that age, but there's other people who don't.
Yeah, I was always envious of those that had a clear pathway, and they knew they were either going to be a doctor or a pilot, or they fancied teaching, and they were very set. And I wish I could have been like them, but I wasn't.
You had no idea what you fancied doing when you left school?
No.
And what did you do when you left school?
When I left school, I left very early. I did my, it was called O-levels in those days. So I finished my O-levels. I left very early. I did, at school, we did all sorts of things like different languages and good old touch typing, you might remember.
I do,
and
yes.
And shorthand. Oh, gosh, that was so tedious. And then my dad, who was in the Air Force, he had a garage, a service station,
mm-hmm.
and a workshop. And he let me leave school early, bless him, to join him, which I loved. I did motor racing and all sorts of things in the year. And unfortunately, we lost him. I'd only been there about a year and he was killed in a car crash.
Oh, dear.
But in that year, I was always under a bonnet or under a car or on a racetrack, which I loved.
Did the driving round the tracks?
Yeah. Yeah, I was one of the youngest. I remember getting my licence when I was 16 and my racing licence, I was 17. Much to my mum's disgust.
Oh, and did you win any races?
A few. Yeah, a few.
So you've got trophies, have you?
Wherever they may be.
Right. You did have trophies.
I did have, yeah.
Yeah? That's good,
isn't it? It was good fun.
What did you do after that?
After that, I went into nursing because it's something I've always loved, is caring for and about people.
Yes.
So I went into nursing, which I just really, really enjoyed. A bit of secretarial work to pay bills as well in between, from the good old touch typing days and the shorthand days. Yeah.
Did you specialise in nursing or was it general nursing?
More general. In those days, it was the old school, which I loved, you know, where the patient kind of sat rigidly up in bed when matron was doing her duty. They were barely allowed to breathe.
Was this still in Rhodesia?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it set me up for life because it's such a discipline.
Yes.
It is such a discipline. And things are vastly different nowadays to how they were.
I think they are. And what were the patients like? Did they do as they were told? Or?
They did. They absolutely did. Yeah, they did. There were no such thing as visitors. And even now, if I go onto a ward and I see somebody sitting on the bed, I almost want to... Because that just didn't happen because of infection control, etc.
Yes.
You know, things have changed and sometimes not always for the better. That's another subject.
And how long did you do nursing for?
I did that for about 3 years, I think. Then my husband then he was in the army. He was an army officer. We went to Salisbury, Harare. And I worked for internal affairs there.
All right.
And I'm trying to think while you're talking, Maggie, because it's such a long time ago, what I actually did there. I know a lot of it was top secret because we were in the middle of a terrorist war.
Mm-hmm.
But it was interesting stuff. And again, that came back to the other skill, you know, your office work and yes. your shorthand, et cetera.
Yes. Did you excel with your shorthand and typing?
I did speed writing more than shorthand. Right. And even now I still do it. Shorthand was just not my thing at all.
Well, it's another language, isn't
it? Yeah, it is another language. Yes. Yeah, it is another language.
Yeah.
But even now I still do it because if I want to write things very quickly, it's very, very useful.
Yes, very absolutely. Useful. I did shorthand when I was at school, Pitman's. And it is another language completely, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It really is. It really is. But I enjoyed that a lot. And I could work mornings, as I recall then, because by that time I'd had my daughter, Paula. So I think, from memory, I think I worked mornings there, so it suited me quite well.
Yeah. And then what did you do in the afternoons? Sleep or?
Dodge the bullets. all sorts of things. It's strange. We always had something to do. I can't yes. describe it. There was always something to do.
There was a lot of unrest, though, wasn't there, at that time?
There was a lot of unrest, yeah. When I look back and I wonder how we got through those days, but if you're brought up with it, it doesn't affect you. Is that the right word I'm looking for? Affect. It's not pleasant at all, but you almost become conditioned.
It becomes the norm, doesn't it, I suppose.
Mm.
So did you have to hide in places? Or?
We did. I remember, for example, if we went travelling between two towns, so if I was going to see my sister in Guelo, you would travel in a convoy. You didn't ever just travel in the
car.
On your
own, yeah.
No. There'd always be an armed, you know, you'd meet at a certain time and then you'd all go together.
Yeah.
If my ex-husband was with me, he would drive or I would drive and there'd be a machine gun out of the window because you just didn't take chances.
Didn't know, yeah.
And if you were going shopping in the centre of Harare that now is, you'd have your shopping list and you'd be looking at it and memorising it because you wanted to get in and out of the building as quickly as you could.
Yes.
Because there were bombs and all sorts of things, so you'd memorise it, run in, get what you needed and out.
That couldn't be a very nice way to live, could it?
No, it wasn't. When I look back, I don't know how we did it, but we did.
Yeah. So you have survived that. So what happened after that?
After that, we won't go political, but Mugabe got in. And my husband, being an army officer, said, we're not staying. And we were in the UK within 2 weeks, I think, of his election.
Right.
We were gone. And that was heartbreaking because we left everything, absolutely everything. The nursery as it was left. We had a lovely little nursery for Paula, everything. And nobody could meet us or say goodbye at the airport because we were going on holiday, in inverted commas.
Right, yes.
Yeah. So we had I think it was £200, a suitcase and a nine-month-old baby.
Not a lot, is it?
No.
To turn up in a strange country.
But we had our safety.
Yes.
And that
so
was
where
important.
Were you then? In England?
In England, Dean's parents had commuted a pension. Dean's dad had been a prison governor in Rhodesia, and he commuted his pension, and we went to stay with him in St Albans.
Right, yeah. A bit different, wasn't it?
Yeah, just a little. Yeah, it was. I remember we landed. It was the 1st of April, so it was April Fool's Day. And the pilot said, we're coming into Heathrow, the temperature's 6 degrees. And I thought, what's 6 degrees? What? I found out. Yeah.
Not very warm.
No.
No.
No. No.
Because I imagine it was quite hot in Rhodesia, was it?
Yeah. It was never below, I mean, in the winter, if it went to about 23, you thought that it was freezing. You know, you'd be wrapping up in hot
right.
water bottles. Yeah, it does make me laugh when I think back.
So there you were, 6 degrees.
6 degrees, yes, yeah, 6 degrees it was. And it was very interesting because we had nowhere to put Paula. So she, for the first 3 weeks, she slept in a trunk with elastic holding the lid open,
yeah.
tied around a window. I had a shopping, or should I say, her grandmother had a shopping trolley. We used to pop her in that to go shopping because we didn't have a pram. It was character building. And I remember when we arrived and Dean said, we're absolutely exhausted. We're just going to bath Paula and put her to bed. And Betty said, oh, we don't have a bath. Ah, shower? No. We haven't got any hot running water either.
It's handy. Yeah.
Yeah, that was. So we used to bath her in the twin tub, as you do.
Hopefully not switching it on so it went
like a bubble bath. Oh, it's strange talking about these things, isn't it? Things that you are in the recess of your mind.
Yes.
But obviously the one thing we decided, integrity, we were not, my parents were both British. My dad was from Jersey, my mum was from Manchester, which is how we came through on an ancestral passport. Right.
On but, your holiday.
Yeah, the holiday.
Oh. Yeah.
But we weren't going to take anything from the government. We'd already decided that. So I started work day three of being here. And that was a real shock to the system. My gracious me, not from the work thing. I've never been work shy. But the different ways of doing things.
Right. What did you do?
I did some temping.
Right.
So I picked up back to the shorthand yep. and the typing. Oh, gosh. I do remember one of my favourite jobs. I was there for 6 months, was working for a chap called Mr. Kitson, and it was a publishing house, and I loved that job. I absolutely loved it. And then when that came to an end, I commuted into London. Not so nice. I worked for a firm of solicitors. Not so nice. They were just very dry, Maggie, very, yes. Oh, it was no fun at all. Mm-hmm. That was not nice. I did a bit of cleaning to make ends meet. I did whatever came up. I did. Whatever there was to do, I would do it. And then we were very lucky because we got a house in Milton Keynes.
All right.
Yeah. Good old Milton Keynes, bless it. Concrete
cows.
Cows, yeah. Yep. You see, it's so long ago I had to really think about that. But that was lovely. So we had our own place, which was just perfect. And there I
did you have a bath?
We did. Oh, my gosh. We had a bath and a shower. It was luxury.
And running water.
And running water. And an inside loo.
Ooh, oh, my wow. God.
Yeah. Oh, that was appreciated, I can tell you. what did we do? What did I do there? I went to work for a place similar to GKN. It was that. It'll come back to me in a moment what it was called. It might not. That ship might have sailed.
Yeah.
But it was similar to GKN, mm-hmm. an aerospace company.
Yeah.
Which I really, really loved. I made some really good friends there.
What did you do there?
Secretarial.
Oh, right.
Yeah, I was back to secretarial there. And I really enjoyed that a lot. And then Dean joined the prison service. And in those days, you could ask where you'd like to be transferred.
Oh, right.
And he chose the Isle of Wight, mm-hmm. which was lovely. And he chose the Isle of Wight because my dad was actually based here during the war.
Uh-huh.
He was a Jersey lad. Based at Forley, and then came to the island, and he actually married somebody on the island, and I have a half-sister on the island.
Oh, right.
Isn't it strange how things come full circle? So we decided that we would go for the Isle of Wight. Mm-hmm. So we moved here in, I'm just trying to think of the dates here, it must have been around 1980.
Mm-hmm.
Two. Around 81, 82,
yep.
We moved to the island. That was lovely.
And was it nice?
Oh, loved it. Fell in love with it.
And have you been here ever since?
Ever since, yeah.
So you got a job doing?
I think when I came over, I didn't work to start with. I did little bits and pieces. So if somebody wanted a stock take, I would do it. Or just little jobs that came in and out. Bit of cleaning, whatever came in. And then a little while later, I decided to go back into the nursing situation again.
Yeah.
My qualification didn't quite, I'd have to redo the whole thing.
Yes, yes.
So I went in, I worked at the Orchards Hospital, the private hospital.
Yep.
And then I did theatre nursing and mm-hmm. theatre nursing on call there, which again, I loved because it's caring about people. Mm-hmm. I loved that. I was at my happiest. Absolute happiest in those days. And I job shared with a lady because I'd had another daughter by then and she was small. So we job shared, which worked absolutely beautifully. And still the children, Anna's 40, one now, and my friend's son is the same age. But they're still, they might not see each other every day, but they're still very close. So yeah. that worked really, really well. And then from there, I think the on-calls were becoming quite tricky because Paula was at school and trying to, you know what to do time-wise. So I joined a practice, a surgery.
Oh, right.
And I started...
a practice nurse?
No, I came out of the nursing side. I was employed to set up the computer system.
Oh, right.
Yeah, the VAMP computer system. It was in those days where they decided computers must hit general surgery.
Okay.
And that was a job and a half because the GPs were opposed to computers. And I had to sell it to the staff, and it was hard work.
Yeah, I bet. We're going to take a little break there for some adverts, and we'll be back with Michelle in a moment.
Vectis Radio.
Right, we're back with Michelle, and you were telling us about how you were trying to get GP surgeries to use computers.
Yes, Maggie, that was a mission because people were very sceptical about them and unsure of them. And, of course, when you've had handwritten notes or prescriptions on cards and results, it was really hard. And it tried every... I had to be very diplomatic, but at the same time, I was on a mission.
that you was will very, do, as I say.
That was really, really tricky because I could see how it could open up all sorts of things. So it was... I needed a lot of tact and diplomacy, and occasionally I'd go outside and kind of screech outside by a tree and go back in with a smile, because we had one GP who has since left us, bless him, and we'd always have a milky coffee. He had milky coffee every morning at 10:30 and go off to the bakery. Somebody would be sent to the bakery, and he liked a donut. And about 3-4 occasions, he'd come and stand over my keyboard and sprinkle the sugar onto the keyboard, which he thought was very funny. I didn't, but there we are. But I thought, you know what, Michelle, this is your opportunity to get people on board. And again, everything that we do in life, you're developing skills all the time, aren't
this
you?
Is
you
true, are, yes.
You're developing and learning all the time. And in the end, it was lovely. We had them in all the consulting rooms. And then I did a lot of training. I then was promoted to practice manager. I loved that job, absolutely loved it. And I used to train people around the island on the computers, and just to say, look, it's okay, it's fine. You know, once you've got confidence with it, that's fine. And that was going well. And then in came fund holding, which you may remember.
Yes.
We held our budgets. And I absolutely loved that because it gave us freedom and the very best for the patients. I loved it, absolutely loved it. But with that came another computer system. Now, bearing in mind, computers had not been up till then my thing, so I had another steep learning curve.
I was going to ask you, how did you get to know about computers to get them into the GP surgery? Was it something they just threw at you? Or?
They just threw it at me, yeah.
Something but you I learned loved it. As yeah. you went.
Right. I did. And the biggest thing that I can say to anybody who feels daunted with a new job, just let things settle. You don't have to know everything at once.
No, you don't.
Just take... Learn in bite-sized chunks. I'm the type of learner. I have to do things in order to learn.
Yeah.
Hands-on. And it was lovely. We had a new computer system. And then we had a secretary join us. And she was presented with Word. Windows and Word. And I remember us both looking at this thinking, what on earth is this? But we grasped it. And I mean, look where we are today. You know, you can't do anything without a computer or Windows or Word or anything else. But the fund holding and the budget was interesting. But again, another steep learning curve. But I loved my job. I loved the patients. I loved bringing incentives into the surgery, finding pilot studies that we could do, like Fit for Life. We hired somebody and they did a little gym thing. Because all of these things is about helping people, helping them feel better. But fund holding ceased, and there was another huge change again. And very sadly, my marriage broke up, and I thought, right, I'm done with the health service now. I'm done with all of that. I fancy a change. The one thing as well I learned there, and I used to give talks on it, is about embrace change, don't be scared of it.
Yep.
Because I always think that while you are whinging about it and being negative, you're wasting all that energy. It's going to happen anyway, so yes, just get on with it and find a way to make it work. So, again, that's something I would say to people, you know, don't hold yourself back. Oh, gosh, go do this. You know, just kind of, oh, let's do this. How are we going to do it? Probably is more the attitude that I like. Which took me on to my next thing. Oh, my days. I still laugh about it. I've always loved catering. Because
yes,
it's just another way of looking after people for me in hospitality. And when I was growing up, we always used to do all sorts of things at the house. The house was always full of Air Force. My dad was in the Air Force. It was always full. There was always cooking and all sorts of lovely things.
Yeah.
So I thought, I'm going to start a catering company.
As you do.
As you do. As you do. Oh, dearie me. And
you knew how to cook things?
Yes.
Or you'd learnt?
I knew, but I thought, right, we're going to use those transferable skills because it's about logistics, it's about costings, it's about people. But very quickly it became very big. That was sink or swim, I can tell you. Oh, I don't do things by half, so
no,
there's never any chance of things not going to plan, shall we say. So we started that up, and very quickly we got the franchise at the lovely Isle of Wight Sports Club in Seaview.
Yep.
Lovely place to be, the only place you could have a fillet steak roll and a game of squash. And I did a lot of work with the lovely Blackbones over there as well. We did a lot of private stuff. I decided we were going for the more prestigious jobs.
That, yes.
And not out of snobbishness, but it's that sort of thing I enjoyed. Mm-hmm. I've never been, and I'm not knocking anybody, but kind of a beige buffet type of person. So we had the best time. We ended up, we were doing weddings and our reputation, we had a superb reputation. And we were chefs as well. And chefs, even in those days, were very hard to come by. I do remember chasing one out of the kitchen because I realised they'd come in, they'd had a bit of wacky-backy.
Oh, dear.
So I chased them out literally down the road. And then I thought, ah, you're going to have to do more chefing than you thought you had to do, Michelle. So I did that and ended up, actually, to cut a long story short, being a chef assessor,
yeah,
which I am now. That was just so much fun, Archipelagos. It really, really was. And then circumstances changed again. And my daughter had her daughter. She was quite young. And I needed to be around for them more. So the catering company, of whom still the employees are my, I wouldn't call them employees, they're still my very, very dear friends. We kind of let that go. And I went to work for Red Funnel.
Right.
I think it was 18 months, I think.
Yeah.
And you know, that was the happiest 18 months of my life. There was no responsibility. I was very lucky that I very quickly got onto the holiday section.
Yeah.
And can you imagine the beauty of being able to sell holidays to people on the Isle of Wight?
Yes.
Coming over. We knew all the hotels. We knew everywhere that they could stay. And it was just a dream. So family would phone in. I'd know exactly what would suit them. Job done. And I really loved that. I absolutely loved that. And then things settled at home. And I thought I really did enjoy the catering thing. And a job came up as catering manager at the UKSA.
Oh, yes.
And that, again, I hadn't realised the enormity of that job. That was, we used to be doing probably 800 meals a day with a young, the vibe in those days, it was about 2000, where am I, about 2000 odd, 2001, beginning of the millennium, was to have a young, vibrant staff. Well, that's great, Maggie, and I love working with youngsters, but my gracious me, that did test me sometimes because you don't always get, you know, they're young, is all I'll say. So I really enjoyed that for a couple of years. And then I did the training to become a chef assessor, which I enjoyed a lot.
Where did you train to do that?
I did that with HTP.
All right.
Yeah, I did that with HTP. But again, being an assessor is quite a hard job because all the time you're being thrown things by the government. You mm-hmm. have to keep, before you'd go in and do your assessing, and then all of a sudden you were suddenly delivering English and maths and all sorts of welfare thing, and you had targets, very strict targets,
right,
as well. And at one stage I had a caseload of about 46, which was quite a lot, quite a lot. So I thought, no, Michelle, you've always wanted your own company. You did the catering company, let's do something else. And that's where the Four Seasons Cookery Academy was born.
Right.
Which was 17 years ago, I think.
Right.
While I was doing the chef assessing, and very soon afterwards, I did a level four and I did the teaching qualification, which allows me to be an accredited trainer for the Chartered Institute of Environmental Health.
Yep.
And a centre, which we are at the moment. And then I did food safety consultancy, which I still do, which I still love. And the reason I did that was because we had an inspection of one of our franchises, which went fine. It was before the hygiene ratings. But I was naive, and it was not a problem. Everything was tip-top. But I remember thinking of the enormity of what I was doing, yes. The responsibility for people's health, which I knew about, but actually it was like a light bulb moment, and I thought, knowledge is power. So get as much knowledge as you can, and then you won't be worrying that you're not doing the right thing, which yes. I knew I was, if that makes sense. So I love that, and I love advising businesses on that because I get it. Yeah. I absolutely get it. So the Four Seasons came along. Then I did train as a nutritionist, which I loved.
Where did you do that?
I did that through the Chartered Institute of Environmental Health. They ran very, very good courses.
Right,
back in the day, Maggie. They don't anymore, very sadly. But back in the day,
yeah,
they did. And I had a special interest because of my medical background with diabetes.
Yeah.
So I did a lot of work around there, a lot of training, and I am now a professional member of Diabetes UK, which, again, I love.
Mm-hmm.
So it's all about, again, those transferable skills.
They are, aren't they?
Yeah. I love it. I train, I do food safety for Flying Fish for their hospitality for the super yacht people. And I love when I talk to them because I always say that life is so exciting. And some of them that are on that course, you know, they've come from university backgrounds. We've had, people with really high-flying jobs on there. They've decided they want to change, and I find it so exciting because there's no such thing these days as a job for life.
No, no.
You know, in our day, you kind of, when I was at school, I don't know what it was like over here, but you either were a mechanic or a hairdresser, or you went into the medical profession or teaching.
And that's where you stayed.
Yeah, and that was it. And now it's not that way anymore. You know, and life is for living.
That can be quite a good thing, though, can't it?
I think it's wonderful.
Yeah. Because you can get very stale, can't you?
Yes, you can.
Yeah.
Yes, you can. I've worked with people, teachers, nurses, and I'm just thinking your time is up because once you stop enjoying it and you go onto automatic pilot.
You become a slave to it, don't
you?
Yeah.
Yeah. I often use the quote, and I believe it's so, so much that if you find a job you love, you will never work another day in your life.
That's right, yeah. It's true.
Yeah.
So did you get clients for the Four Seasons Academy, Cookery Academy?
It was slow to start with because people are always very suspicious. And the clients, you know, the council, for example, I remember one chap who shall remain nameless, who I remember sitting on the carpet thinking, what am I doing? He said, you've come from nowhere. He said, you know, you've got to build up a reputation before we'll even look at you. Those were his words. But actually, it was about 6 years down the line, he was one of my biggest contracts. He was not giving at first, but I had to earn that, and I did.
Yeah.
I absolutely did. Half of me understood it, and the other half, because I know my integrity, that I would have delivered.
Yes, but he didn't know that.
He didn't know that, no. But he did. He certainly did, and it's lovely. And now, you know, we have a superb reputation.
That's good.
And just really enjoy what we do.
So does that incorporate the environmental health, or is that separate?
That's separate. So there's quite a few strands, Maggie, to the academy, because we do the environmental health. So I teach environment, you know, the food safety levels, yep. 2 and 3. I do the food safety consultancy, so that's kind of one strand. There's a nutrition strand, which I haven't developed as much as I would love because time doesn't allow me to. And then there's the hands-on cookery.
Yes.
So
is that for a group of people or an individual or anything?
Well, funny enough, it can be anything. I had there's a group of people from America who I'm going to be doing an online course with in the next few weeks. I think there's 10 of them, and they've been doing nutrition over a coffee and really learning about, because food is such a powerful, powerful subject. Oh, my gosh, so, so powerful. And they've asked to do an online cookery course, which will be lovely.
So they're still in America?
Yeah.
Oh.
That'll be lovely. You know, just putting everything they've learned into practice, because yeah. I write all my own recipes. So yes. if they just tell me, I can write one for them. A majority of the work I do is in schools, which I love. Absolutely love that. And I still see people now 12, 13, 14 years after I first met them. And they've still got the recipes and they're still using them. And that makes me
That's
so happy.
Good, doesn't it?
Yeah.
So have you got the little ones who get all excited about cooking?
Or oh, gosh,
do
yes.
they make a hell of a mess?
I always say, whatever mess you make, you clean up. But I've just finished it at Barton Primary now. We had nine little ones and their parents, carers. And it's just lovely. It's a 5-week course. It's just wonderful because they get so much from it. They're so excited. And every child can cook. It doesn't matter, you know, whether they are, you know, whatever it is, whether they come to me and they've got ADHD or they've been diagnosed with autism or whatever else or learning needs, I love the fact that we can get the best out of them
yeah.
and they can create something and take it away and enjoy it.
Yeah. Lovely.
Common ground.
We're going to take another little break for the adverts and then we'll be back again with Michelle.
Vectis Radio.
We're back again with Michelle. It's fascinating to hear those children making all their stuff and taking it home and eating it. And but their parents are pleased, aren't they?
Their parents love it. They get as much of it from... Because, of course, we've missed generations now of cookery at school, Maggie.
Yeah.
So, and there's no judgment with me. There's absolutely none. We just have a good time and get the job done.
That's good.
Yeah.
And since then, you've opened a bistro.
Yes. I thought... Now, this is still
didn't
an hour.
Didn't you work somewhere else, like a sports centre, running the cafe?
Oh, yes, during... that was another thing, yes. They all link in together. It was... I worked at lovely West Wyatt Sports Centre, and I was taken on to run the cook project,
yes.
creating opportunities in our kitchen, that stood for. Claire Griffin put in for a grant and received a lot of money, and that was working with people with learning, special learning needs, and that was fun. That was really, really lovely. That lasted, and then during COVID, I was doing the meals that were going out to community
yeah.
in the kitchen there. That was lovely. Really, really happy days. And then when we finished, I think it was three years in June, lovely Gurnard Press that's local to me was put on the market in December. I think it was December that year. And I was driving past it in May, looking longingly at it because I used to love going in there. And I thought, Michelle, what are you doing? That's the perfect opportunity with my beautiful granddaughter, Ava, who's been part of my cookery and the academy and the business and archipelago since she was born. And she's always
been... Was she born with a frying pan in her hand?
Just about, Maggie, just about. Honestly, from the age of 6, I could run a function with her. She's always been absolutely... She's just got it. So we took that on, which is wonderful because, again, it's become a real community thing. It's not just about making money. Obviously, we have to make a living, but it's just a lovely place where people can be, enjoy good food, delicious coffee, and a lovely atmosphere because it's all about caring about people. That is the whole, everything that I do is with that in mind.
Yes.
And I think you have to make that work for you.
Yeah.
You know, had I stayed in the health service, I probably would have burnt out because they don't do things like I do. Like, and that, I don't mean to sound arrogant, but things have changed.
Yes.
And you wouldn't be able to do things the way you'd like them to be done anymore.
No.
For various reasons I won't go into. So, you know, you have to find other outlets, really.
You've found several, haven't you? Because haven't recently you've rescued the Daisy bus and called it the Daisy Ring bus?
Dear Daisy Ring bus. Well, whoever thought we'd be running like a bus company? I'm going to start laughing inappropriately here because that's a mission. That is a mission. Yeah. I decided after listening to the county press online at the beginning of August, it was going to be finishing, and I thought, no, it's absolutely not a chance.
The funding ran out, didn't it?
The funding ran out, yeah. And people often say, you know, if you knew then what you knew, would you still have done it? And the answer is yes.
Yeah.
But it is a labour of love because it is very, very, very intense.
Yes.
We are transporting upwards now of 2,000 patients a month. Now we've taken Portsmouth over as well. And with that, you've got all the you know, the rules, the restrictions, the regulations, yeah, the safety. And we now have a bank of 12, coming up to 14 voluntary drivers as well. So it's quite an operation, that one. So again,
so the buses are actually on the mainland, one yes, at Southampton, one at Portsmouth.
Yes, indeed. Yeah.
Yeah.
And we, you know, every, what did I know about bus regulations? You could put the knowledge on the back of a postage stamp, Maggie, but now I'm absolutely fully, because if I do something, it's done properly.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't just fly at something. You have to give it your all. You can't just dabble in things and think, oh, it's going to be okay. It's not my style of doing things. But we've got lovely directors alongside. So we now have that directorship as well. And then, of course, Rotary, which is a major part of my life.
Yep.
And for 4 years, I was assistant governor on the island. It's, again, about getting the best out of people.
Yes.
You facilitate, you inspire, you just, and that's, you know, when we started talking about this at the beginning, and you just think about the transferable skills and the jobs for life, but actually everything that connects everything that I've done in my life is about people.
Yeah.
Because people are the most important. They are what make us tick. And once you find out what makes somebody tick, that is the job done.
Yeah.
From any walk of life. Any walk of life at all. And it just makes a difference because it helps us. You know, days when it's a bit gloomy outside or whatever else, if you do something nice for somebody, it might be opening a car door or just giving somebody a bunch of flowers, a random act of kindness.
Yeah.
That makes us feel that's oh gosh, that was lovely. You know, we don't have to have bright sunshine or millions of pounds in the bank to feel good.
No, but there's no reason why you can't be kind to someone without expecting anything in return.
Exactly right. Yeah, kindness is so underrated.
Yeah.
And I have noticed since COVID that unfortunately kindness is not a given anymore. You know, I thought that it would be a lot further on than it is, and it isn't. But that often people are fighting their own little battles.
They are, yes.
You know, and if we're just kind, it just makes a huge, huge difference.
It could be just a smile, couldn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly right. Little pat on the shoulder if you think somebody's kind of not quite where they need to be.
Yeah.
But it is. It's just caring for and about each other. That's a whole new subject on that. Sorry, I could go on and on.
No, but you're involved as well with the Samaritans.
Yes, the family of Samaritans on the island, they are an amazing organisation. And I'm very proud to be on their training team. And
that's about helping people as well, isn't it?
Absolutely right. Yeah. And with nothing in return, because I have this huge thing, Maggie, which is what my life is about, is ego versus soul.
Yeah.
And sometimes I look in the mirror and I'll ask myself, Michelle, why are you doing that? Is it for the right reason? And I have to convince myself that it is, because it's not about ego.
Oh,
it's
no.
Got nothing to do about that at all. It's about giving the best that you can.
You have to have a little bit of ego to be able to do stuff, but you haven't got to have so much ego that
no.
You're doing it for the wrong reasons, as you say.
It destroys people. Ego just is a destroyer.
Yeah.
It is an absolute. And having worked in many places where there are egos at play, it's that actually that causes quite a few challenges.
Yeah, I bet. So what's next for you?
Well, I'm 17 June, Maggie. I think I'll just keep the status quo for the time being.
Okay.
I think I'll just keep the status quo. Daisy is going to keep me very busy, and we've got some lovely directors there. The Bistro, Ava does the majority of that, my granddaughter, so I kind of make guest appearances. Absolutely wonderful.
You drift in and out, do
I
you?
Drift in and out and drink coffee and waft around. No, seriously, I do. I do help. And the Academy is just going to tick along.
Yeah.
Just going to tick along.
So what would you advise people who think to themselves, what am I going to do with my life? What work will I do when I leave school? What should I do? Should I go to university? should I not go to university? What would you advise people?
I'd advise them to follow their heart, Maggie, and not to worry about what other people say. That is the biggest thing. You know, where I come from, it was very much you will do this, this and this, because otherwise what will people say?
Yeah.
And that's the biggest thing. You know, throw that right out the window and be in touch with yourself. Perhaps try a little bit of voluntary work and see what you like. You know, you might want to go to the Donkey Sanctuary or work at the RSPCA or something and get a feel for it and see. And remind yourselves that actually there's no such thing, I said, as a job for life.
Yeah.
We are not a tree. We can move. And if you're doing something, take from it what you can, the experience, good and bad. I remember cleaning up a pool of sick in when I was cleaning Milton Keynes, thinking, oh, my God. But again, when you finish and you look at the floor and it's pristine, you get a certain sense of satisfaction.
Yes, yes.
And don't be too proud to try different things. You know, be humble again.
Yeah.
Because that's where things grow from. And you find yourself. Once you've found yourself, then you will find what suits you.
No, it's really interesting because it's similar to we've done some other interviews with other people and they've all said more or less the same thing. If you love it, keep doing it. If you don't like it, change.
Yeah, absolutely. I think often people are scared of failure, Maggie.
Yeah.
And I just want to hug them with it. With, you know, I can't. What if I don't? What if I can't do it? But what if you can?
Well, absolutely. You know? But we all make mistakes, don't
we? Yeah, absolutely.
And we
right.
learn from them.
And knowing, you know, to stick in a job that you, I can think of nothing worse. When I was commuting or teaching on the mainland, I've delivered all sorts of courses. And you see the commuters there and they look so miserable. And I thought, no, thanks. Absolutely not. You know, there has to be quality of life somewhere.
Yes. Yeah.
And just doing something that really floats your boat. And this business of, you know, you've got to go to university. Really? Have you? Have you? You know, if you're going to university and you've got an absolute track and you know what you're going to do, go for it.
Fine, yes.
But if you're going because it's something that I ought to do.
Well, you've been told you ought to do. Yes.
Then it's, have a rethink.
Yeah. So if you were to sum up everything that you've done over the years, are all the things what you wanted to do, or were there some you thought, oh, I wish I hadn't done that?
I don't think so, Maggie, because that's what's made me the person that I am today. So
you've learned
a lot really,
from
yeah, I really don't think. I have a bit of a passion about, I'm also a mental health first aider, which I loved doing that course because I've seen staff being treated very badly in certain places. And I have to say the teaching profession is one of them and the health service is another. And I don't like that.
Yeah.
I really don't like that. You know, this is where the egos come into play and you get people throwing their weight around or have been promoted above their station.
Yes.
And probably if I had time, I do run management courses, but I would like to do more on that to train, help to train managers to be good managers.
When are you be doing this then?
Well.
In your spare time?
Spare time. But it makes a difference because there are some pretty poor managers out there.
Yeah.
And they make staff life hell.
Thank you, Michelle. You've been very forthcoming and it's been a real pleasure to interview you.
It's a pleasure, Maggie. Thank you for asking me. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
If you would like to hear this or any other of the conversations again, go to the Vectis Radio webpage, vectisradio.com, and you can find it amongst the podcasts.
Your support matters. We operate thanks to the support of local businesses. If you would like to advertise on Vectis Radio, FM 104.6, contact our team today. Marketing at vectisradio.fm.